Let me read to you from one of the student newspapers. This comes from Freshers' Week a few years ago. I haven't bothered to read this year's because they'll only say the same thing by a different writer. In fact, one year I noticed that the Newcastle Freshers' rag had simply got out the article from 2 years ago and simply changed the order of the bullet points. It was that blatant. So I've given up reading the new ones. There's nothing new. It went like this. Probably the worst thing about being a fresher is the despicably patronising lists that newspapers publish, telling you exactly what you should and shouldn't do to enjoy university life. They are utter rubbish and should be ignored. The brilliance of university life is that you are given the freedom to do exactly what you want. So expletive to anyone who wants to lecture you on what to do and have a good time, just go out and do it. So says the Courier. And if you have just arrived as a student, you will have spent the last week having people telling you what to do or trying, having the Freshers' Week organised, telling you that you must get drunk, you must pair off with someone, students must do this and must do that. It is amazing how many people are trying to tell us what to do in life. And that is true for those of us who are not students. Adverts, TV, films, magazines, teachers, the organisations that we work for, the people we look up to, the government, they are all trying to tell us what to think and be and do. And most of us like to think that we are really not that influenced by that. We like to think that we are independent, that I'm more a leader than a follower. But experience says otherwise. For example, I was flying back from Spain earlier this year, and I arrived at check-in at Malaga Airport, and there was this single vast queue for the EasyJet flight. And I joined the back of it, and then it occurred to me that there were five desks, all EasyJet desks, all open. And I suddenly decided I was going to cut and run, and so I sort of moved out into the fast lane and went past all these 100 people to the next desk and checked in. And I could feel 100 pairs of eyes looking at me in disbelief and resentment. And then there was this stampede, complete stampede. And it just shows that we are natural followers. If there is a queue there to join, we will join it. If there is a stampede to join, we will join it. We are natural followers. Experience says we are natural followers. And that is what Jesus Christ says as well. In fact, on one occasion he described us as sheep. The classic example of an animal which is a natural follower and desperately needs a good shepherd. And according to Jesus, the most important decision we make in life is who we ultimately allow to be our shepherd. Now, it is very encouraging to see that there are many new faces here tonight. And so for many of you, I have not got a clue what you currently believe about Jesus. If you're new, let me just say we are a church that believes that he was God become a human being and that he is alive after his death and resurrection and that he is the only way to come into relationship with God. So we believe in simply putting Jesus' claims out on the table so that whoever you are, wherever you stand with all of this, you can give it a first or second thought and make up your own mind about him. To do that, you have to go to the Bible. So can I ask you please to pick up one of the Bibles around the seats and turn, if you would, to page 1076. Page 1076. And that should land you in John's Gospel and chapter 10. Do please open up one of those. And do please share with those around the building. There are not lots of Bibles. Certainly not enough for one each. John's Gospel, chapter 10. We have plunged into an eyewitness account of Jesus' life and death and rising again from the dead, written by one of Jesus' original 12 followers, the Apostle John. And Jesus is painting a kind of picture of our lives where we are like sheep, flock of sheep, and we are being got at from two directions. On the one hand, there is a whole world full of people out there, from the fresher's steward to government legislation, telling us what to think, do, and be. And on the other hand, there is Jesus. So look down, if you would, to John chapter 10 and verse 7. Therefore, Jesus said again, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. Don't worry about all the detail of this. All who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. He will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I am the good shepherd. So Jesus is basically saying this, choose any other shepherd but him and they will ultimately mess your life up. You'll lose. Because according to Jesus, only he can deliver the good life because only he is the good shepherd, which is a pretty big claim. And so we're going to think about it for the rest of our time together. I want to ask three questions. Number one, what do other shepherds have to offer? Number two, what does Jesus have to offer? Number three, who are you going to trust? So number one, what do other shepherds have to offer? And Jesus' answer is not just nothing, but worse than nothing. In John chapter 9, Jesus has just healed a blind man. This man can now see, and he's actually come to trust Jesus. In our terms, he's become a Christian. The religious leaders of the day, who've already made up their minds against Jesus, now haul this bloke in and try to get him to side with them against Jesus. In other words, rejoin the crowd. But he won't. And in chapter 10, enter Jesus, speaking to some of those leaders who are putting pressure on him, plus this man himself. And Jesus says, verse 8, all who ever came before me were thieves and robbers, but the sheep did not listen to them. And he's blatantly talking about these spiritual leaders standing there. He's saying, you are not the spiritual leaders you claim to be. You are not shepherds, you are robbers. And he goes on in verse 10, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. So that is what Jesus says about these religious leaders who are rejecting him. Don't confuse religious with Christian. And the same applies to all kinds of leaders and opinion makers and peer group leaders who are basing their lives on rejecting Jesus. For example, Decca Aitkenhead. She's now a national journalist. She writes for The Guardian, as far as I remember. But as a student, she wrote a piece for the Independence Student Survival Guide one precious week. Let me quote from one would-be shepherd, in this case, shepherd of your sex life. She says, there is no point in being coy about this. Nobody else has been. Your friends have savoured endless speculation on the subject. Your father has mumbled about condoms. Even you, dare I say it, have given it some thought. In the awestruck words of your younger brother, you are going to have so much sex. What you do, how often you do it, and with whom is entirely your own affair. Your freshers pack will probably include a free condom, but this is unlikely to last your entire university career, so it's wise to stock up. Hopefully your brother is right. It would be a shame not to sample all the opportunities of life at university, particularly between the sheets. Which sounds so persuasive. But if you look back to John chapter 10 and verse 10, see what Jesus says about Decca Aitkenhead. Jesus says, she comes only to steal and kill and destroy. She comes only to steal your virginity, kill your conscience, and destroy your relationships, according to Jesus. But boy, does she make life without God sound fun when you read the whole article. And there is her picture, smiling out from the newspaper beside what she's written. And you would never guess the secret doubts and guilt and hurts that her own lifestyle has inflicted on her and which she now wants to drag you into. Because false shepherds and their flocks always have to keep up a front that everything is okay. No one is allowed to express doubt or the fact that people are getting hurt. So she's a false shepherd out to rob us. The teacher in the PSE lesson who says, look, all normal people are experimenting, is out to rob us. The peer group leader in the bar or the office party, because it only moves up the age range, who's trying to get people to overdrink, is out to rob us of our individuality and our dignity. The media that says, this is the perfect body that you've got to have. is out to rob us of the contentment to be ourselves. The financial industry that is saying work and earn and spend more is out to rob us of our generosity and sometimes our balance of life. The soaps on TV are out to normalise sin, the celebrities are out to glamorise sin, and all out to rob us. And Jesus is saying, look at all the people who are trying to influence you whilst building their lives on rejection of him. Look at the Freshers' Week organisers. Look at some of the things your teachers and lecturers are saying, and the columns in the newspapers are saying, and the adverts in the magazines. And see them for what they really are. They are not shepherds, as they think, but robbers. What do other shepherds have to offer? Well, Jesus says what never gets said. The answer is not fun, but nothing, and worse than nothing. And I wonder if you believe that. And if we do, Jesus' words here call on us to follow his lead in seeing through all those other would-be shepherds and distrusting them and questioning their wisdom and their motives. And I want to call on us to do that. Second question, what does Jesus have to offer? Have another look down to John chapter 10 and verse 10. Where Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. So Jesus is saying, only he can offer us life at its best. And again, that never gets said either, does it? Quite the opposite. The Christian life in the media or any conversation or people's thinking is generally portrayed as negative and Christians as people who are missing out. For example, one of the student newspapers here ran an article headlined, No Sex, Please, We're Students. And all credit to them, it was an interview they'd done with a group from the Christian Union about why they believed in keeping sex for marriage. Let me read a few bits where you get the interviewer's slant pretty clearly. She writes, this kind of assertion would cause intense discomfort, if not outright ridicule, in any student bar you care to mention. Many people would say this is an unnatural, repressed, and regressive response to an outdated piece of literature. In other words, this thing, the Bible. So the world is saying to us that it offers life in all its fullness, and Christians are missing out, and Jesus says he offers life to the full, and the world is missing out. And it begs the question, what is life to the full? Who do you believe? And what missing ingredient means you don't have life to the full? And according to the Bible, the missing ingredient is relationship with God. Without that, according to the Bible, you can exist, but you can't live. It's a bit like Freshers' Week, where I think the number one thing on my mind was the need to make new friends. And your nightmare scenario is sitting in your room on your own, just not yet knowing anyone. The reason that is a nightmare is that because we were created to be such relational people. We need the love of other people. For example, someone knocking on our door to check that we're okay. And we need the wisdom of other people. For example, someone whose own door we can knock on to ask, how do you do beans on toast? Or some other such taxing question of student life. A first year admitted to me a few years ago that he caused a fire in Castle Leazes in one of the kitchens. And I said, what happened? He said, I burnt the spaghetti. And I said, what, did you leave it to boil dry? He said, no, I didn't even realise you had to put water in it. So we need the wisdom of other people. And it may not have occurred to you that, above all, we were created to relate to God. And that's not a difficult move, is it, to think we are so relational on the horizontal level, to think that there might be a God there, and that above all we were made to relate to him, and that above all we need his love, because it's more reliable than any human love, which is too small to build our security on. And that above all we need his wisdom, because human wisdom isn't enough to answer all the questions that life throws at us. So your neighbours in halls can tell you how to do beans on toast, probably. But they can't tell you what is right or wrong or what the point of life is. For example, whether you should or should not sleep with your girl or boyfriend. Or how to make those final year decisions, the big ones on the horizon. Jesus says it's only relationship with God that gives you those answers, and that that relationship is what he came to offer. And to do that, he had to die. Look down to what he goes straight on to say in verse 11. He says, I've come that they may have life to the full. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. So he adds a bit more to this picture of us as sheep and him as shepherd. And he adds the issue of the sheep being in real danger. So imagine a wolf coming for them. And imagine the shepherd standing himself between them and the wolf. And in the process of killing the wolf, being killed himself. That would be a case of the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. And Jesus says, that is a picture of what he has done for us. Because according to the Bible, we are in real danger from God. The biggest danger you and I face in this world is God. Imagine that this hand stands for you or me, and the light up there stands for God. According to the Bible, we were created to live in open, trusting relationship with God. But according to the Bible, we have all turned away from God. Like it said in that Old Testament reading, all we like sheep have gone astray, turned each one to his own way. Which is actually incredibly offensive to God. It's accepting life but ignoring the giver. It's letting your parents support you at university for 3 years and then completely ignoring them with no contact, no visits, no thanks. It's that on the grand scale. So then imagine this book stands for the record of everything that we have done to offend God. Not just that ignore him attitude, but everything we think and say and do wrong as a result. According to the Bible, at the end of our lives, when we meet God as judge, that is the book that he should hold against us. That is the reason why he should cut us off from himself. That is the reason we should be shut out of the kingdom of heaven. Because you cannot enjoy membership of a kingdom if you will not accept the king. It just doesn't happen. So we are in real danger from God's judgment. And the only way out from under that judgment is if God will remove it. And the heart of the Christian message is that he has made a way by sending his son, the Lord Jesus, to be a human being alongside us. And then to die our judgment death instead of us, so that we can be forgiven back into relationship with God. That Old Testament reading said this: all we like sheep have gone astray, we've turned each one to his own way, and God has laid on him the wrongdoing of us all. What that is saying is that when Jesus died on the cross, it was God himself taking on himself his own judgment. It was the shepherd standing between the sheep and the danger of his own judgment. That is what Jesus meant when he said, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Talking about his death so that we could be forgiven. And if you just look down to verse 18 of John chapter 10, to verse 18. Jesus has just said, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. And then verse 18, he says, no one takes it from me. It wasn't Pontius Pilate or the Roman soldiers or any of the other people that you watched in the Passion of the Christ. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down and authority to take it up again. And the reason I ultimately believe any of what I'm saying to be true is that Jesus did take his life up again. He was crucified on Good Friday and put in a tomb. On Easter Sunday, the tomb was empty and eyewitnesses were seeing him alive again beyond death. And that sets Jesus apart from any mere human being. I mean, I might say, I have authority to lay down my life. I'm going to go down to the Tyne Bridge and jump off later and end it all tonight. What none of us can say is, I have authority to take it up again. I'm going to go down to the Tyne Bridge, jump off, end it all tonight, and I will appear risen again on Tuesday morning, to copy Jesus' timescale. So what does Jesus have to offer? The answer is forgiveness back into the relationship with God that we were made for. Look at Jesus' death on the cross and you see the love that is on offer, love that values you more than anyone because it has given more than anyone. And look at then Jesus' resurrection from the dead, and you see the wisdom that is on offer. You see that he really does have the authority of God to tell us everything we need to know about how life works. That is what Jesus offers, which brings us to my last question. Who are you going to trust? Who are you going to allow to be your shepherd? Who are you currently allowing to be your shepherd? It's pretty obvious in this incident in John 10 that Jesus has an unhidden agenda to call us to follow him. Have a look down to verse 16, lastly, where he says in this conversation, "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen." And he was talking about everyone who'd ever hear and believe the Christian message. "I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also. They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." So Jesus is calling us to abandon all other would-be shepherds and trust our lives to him. Now, you may already have done that, or you may still be on the outside looking in. Whichever you are, you will know that trusting Jesus in the face of all the other would-be shepherds is much easier said than done. You will know that when you look outside Jesus' sheep pen, the grass does look greener in a lot of other places. And you think, those sheep look to me as if they might be having a better time. And we might be, or I could be, missing out if I was inside. And that can make you hesitate to become a Christian. It can make you want quietly to drop the Christianity that you've been brought up with. Now you're in a new situation. Or it can just make you a miserable Christian because you know you can't drop it because it's true, but you can't seem to enjoy it. And at that point, you've basically got two options. Option number one is experiment. Go and try the grass elsewhere. See if it tastes any good. The problem with experimenting is that it's simply not true that if it tastes good, it is good. That just doesn't follow. For example, sex feels good most times, but that is because it was created to, and it still feels good in many contexts where it is wrong and harmful. Option number one is experiment. Option number two is trust Jesus. Trust that the grass is greenest inside his sheep pen, even at the point where it seems difficult, if not impossible, either to obey him in a particular area of his will or to understand why he is not giving you something in life that you wish he would. And that is not easy, to trust his goodness at those points. And the only answer is to look back to the cross and to remember that a good shepherd is the shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep. Did the fresher steward who was trying to get you into bed last week lay down his life for you? Does the teacher who is trying to embarrass or manipulate you in front of your class love you to that extent? That is ultimately how you know whether a shepherd is good and has your best interests at heart. One Christmas as a boy, I asked my parents for a racing bike and a penknife, and in their wisdom, they gave me the bike and not the knife. They knew that I needed a penknife like a hole in the head, and that if they gave me one, my brother would almost certainly have a hole in the head by the end of Christmas Day. And in my 10-year-old lack of perspective, I concluded not really being good to me. I could not see that by far the biggest thing was actually the measure of their love. And in the light of that, the withholding of the small thing was actually also an expression of love. I just could not see that. And if you are going to keep trusting in Jesus, perhaps particularly in a new situation, or start trusting in Jesus, you need that perspective that says, he has done the ultimate biggest thing for me. He has laid down his life for me. So I am going to trust him, including at those points where trust seems difficult, if not impossible. I must finish. I want you to imagine that I was to draw a line, and at this end of the line, are people who would say, I've already put my trust in Jesus. I know what you mean, talking about Jesus as a shepherd. I'm a forgiven person and I have given the lead of my life over to Jesus. If that is you, he calls on you this evening to keep seeing all other would-be shepherds for what they are and to keep trusting your life to him. At the other end of the line are people who are just thinking about this, not even sure that it's true, certainly not sure whether you believe it yet yourself. If that is you, it is great to have you along. We hope that you'll come again, and we'd love you to join, if you want to, one of our Christianity Explored groups, where you can join with other people at the same asking questions stage, and just look for yourself. But in the middle of that line would be someone who is saying, I do know that this is all true. That is not my issue. And really, I've thought everything out that I need to think. What I do know is I haven't yet taken the step of turning to Jesus and trusting my life to him as shepherd. And if that's you, I'm simply going to end with a prayer that would be a way of taking that step. Let me tell you what I'm going to pray. I'll pray this in just a moment. Risen Lord Jesus, I confess that I have gone my own way and ignored you, my rightful shepherd. Thank you for being the good shepherd and laying your life down for me. Please forgive me. Please take your rightful lead of my life. And please help me to trust and obey you from now on. Now, if you are further up the line or further back down the line, that would not be appropriate for you. And I would encourage you in the pause that we have to pray something else. Even if it is just, God, if you are really there, please bring me to know you. But if you are in the middle, it is appropriate for you, and you want to take that step of becoming a Christian now, then you could echo it in your mind as I lead us in it right now. So let's bow our heads to pray. Let's just have a moment of quiet just to collect our thoughts, think what, if anything, we want to pray, and then I'll lead us in that prayer. And you can echo it if you want to make it your own. So here is that prayer. Risen Lord Jesus, I confess that I have gone my own way and ignored you, my rightful shepherd. Thank you for being the good shepherd and laying down your life for me. Please forgive me. Please take your rightful lead of my life. And please help me to trust and obey you from now on. Amen.